A sudden barrage of enemy guns, distant, impatient, came on just before the middle of the night over Monthax, and stippled the belly of the low brown sky with reflected flashes of fire and light. Wet, hollow rumbles barked and growled through the swamps and ground mist like starving hounds. Leagues away, some brutal night combat was underway. Gaunt woke instinctively at the sound of the guns and took a walk out of the command shed. The sound was coming from the east, and he had a sergeant circle around to check on the sentry lines. The artillery sounded like someone flapping and cracking a large, sweat-damp sheet in the hot, heavy air. He crossed a gurgling creek via a duckboard bridge and made it into the tree line just as the humidity broke and cold, drooling rain began to fall through air, suddenly stirred by chill breezes. It was almost a relief, but the rain was sticky and sappy and stung his eyes. Gaunt found himself on the embanked approach to one of the main sentry towers and pulled himself up the ladder. The towers, set at 100-meter intervals along the main defile, rose some 10 meters out of the surface filth. They were fashioned from groups of tree trunks, shored together and stoutly buttressed with riveted beams, and supported large, flakboard gun nests mounted on the top. Up in the dark nest, Trooper Bragg tended a cradle-mounted pair of twinned heavy bolters, drums of shells piled around his huge feet. A flakboard cover kept the rain off, and the nest was shrouded by netting.
"Sir,"
Bragg saluted, his big face cracking into a broad, embarrassed grin. He was making fortified caffeine over a little burner, his huge paws dwarfing the pot and cup. He tried to hide the flask of sacra behind the stove, but the scent of the liquor was pungent in the close air of the nest. Gaunt nodded the salute. "I'll have one myself," he said. "A stiff one." Bragg seemed to relax. He sloshed a generous measure of sacra into a second battered cup and fussed over the boiling pot. Gaunt was amused, as always, by the combination of brutal strength and timidity in this giant of a man. Bragg's hands were big and strong enough to crush skulls, but he moved almost meekly, as if afraid of his own strength, or afraid of what others might think him capable of. He handed the commissar a hot cup, and Gaunt sat on a pile of shell drums, gesturing out across the jungle to the east. The nest's raised vantage point afforded a better view of the distant fighting. Flares and traces showed above the trees, and as the rain dissipated the mist, there were ruddy ground fires to be seen amid the trunks.
"Someone's having fun," he remarked.
Bragg nodded, sipping his own cup.
"I make 4 or maybe 5 enemy positions, infantry support teams. They've advanced and dug in because the fire patterns are static, but they've found something to shoot at.
If they move this way, we'll need to take action." Bragg patted his heavy weapons.
"Let them come,"
Gaunt grinned. Bragg was a good heavy weapons technician, but his aim had scarcely improved since the founding. Still, with guns with that sort of cycle rate and that much ammo, he should hit something. "Oh, well, I remember," Gaunt said. "The western embankments are collapsing again. I told Major Rawn that you'd help the detail redig tomorrow. They need some heavy lifting." Bragg nodded without question. His great physical strength was an asset to the Ghosts, and was matched by his geniality and willingness to help. He reminded Gaunt of some great blunt weapon, like a club, deadly when delivered properly, but difficult to wield or aim. Bragg batted a moth away from his face.
"Precious little place we've found here," he remarked.
"Monthax is short on charm," Gaunt admitted, studying the hulking trooper quizzically. Bragg was a strange man. Gaunt had decided that long ago. He'd never met a human so physically powerful, yet mentally restrained, as if he was somehow afraid of the terrible power he could unleash. Others took it for stupidity and regarded big old Bragg as dumb. But the man patently wasn't stupid. In his own quiet, mountainous way, he was the most formidable and dangerous ghost of all. So preoccupied by his physical power, others always underestimated the mind behind it. And the mind, Gaunt knew, was the strongest thing of all.
Part 6. That Hideous Strength. Caligula, after the Imperial liberation. Nights as bright as day, lit by the burning hive cities. Days as dark as night, choked by the petrochemical smoke. Soot, like fat black snowflakes, fluttered down everywhere. Even out here, in the Deadlands. Steepled canyons of coral bright rock. wisps of fluorescent dust licking the high places and the rims of the calderas. Cracked, dry basins of hard, russet cake earth. Wide, slumping ridges of glass sand. And death, bleached and baked white, like bones that had been out in the sun for years. 18 cargo transports, 30-wheel monsters, coughing blue exhaust from their vertical pipe stacks, ground down the Red Rock Pass in low gear. The tractor units at the front of each payload wagon were monsters, armored cabs of scorched metal rattling on top of a huge engine unit, glaring forward through multiple fog lamp eyes and grinning fly-flecked smiles of fender bars, radiator grills, and spiked running boards. Flanking the massive transports were the outriders, rushing through the dust on track bikes and in armored cars. Palapé Touvent, transport driver, Caligula born and bred, wrestled with the half-moon wheel of the convoy's lead freighter and glanced around at his co-driver. Cluin Milum was looking out of the cab window, occasionally regarding his chronometer. They were both wringing with sweat, entombed by the heat from the roaring engine under their feet. Milum had dropped the window armor panels and opened the metal vents in the hope of washing them with cool breeze from outside. But the surface temperature out in the deadlands was pushing 40 degrees, and they baked. Occasionally, sprays of hot engine oil spurted back from the leaky head gasket and spattered in at them through the forward grill screen. Milum sat back in his ripped leather seat and looked up at the cab's ceiling hatch.
"He's still up there?"
Touvent nodded, wrenching the wheel. Both of them were all too used to the juddering, shaking motion of the vehicle.
"Probably sticking his head out of the turret like a dog, enjoying the rush of air."
Milum chuckled.
"Kick, but he's a dumbass, right? Never stood in line for brains."
Touvent nodded.
"Typical guard, all muscle and no head. Where the keck were they when the hives fell, huh? Answer me that."
"In a troop ship and transit,"
Trooper Bragg answered plainly, his huge bulk clambering down the rungs from the top hatch to join them. He stood at the back of the cab, holding onto a roll bar for support as the tractor lurched over uneven ground.
"Colonel Commissar Gaunt said we got here as fast as we could."
He smiled sheepishly at the two-man driving team.
"I'm sure he did,"
Touvent murmured. Bragg edged forward, using handholds to stop himself from falling.
"We're making good time, aren't we?"
"Brilliant time," Milum replied, turning away from the big ghost. "Calpurnia Station will rejoice when we arrive."
"I'm sure it will,"
Bragg smiled, sinking into the bench seat behind the driver's position.
"That'll be good. When the Colonel Commissar ordered me to command this convoy detail, I said to him, I will get it through on time. Trust me, Colonel Commissar, I will." "And we are, aren't we?"
"Yes, we are, right on time,"
Touvent said.
"Good. That's good. The Colonel Commissar will be pleased."
Malum muttered something unflattering about the high and mighty Colonel Commissar.
"What did you say?"
Bragg asked sharply. Milum stiffened. He looked across at Touvent. They'd been in the company of this huge guardsman for maybe 3 hours all told, and had so far reckoned him to be dim-witted and slow. Of course, his sheer bulk was impressive, but they had felt confident about laughing at him behind his back. Now Milum tensed, feeling perhaps he'd gone too far, feeling the giant behind them might suddenly unleash his undoubted physical power in a mindless tantrum.
I didn't say anything."
"You did. You said something about my Colonel Commissar."
"Something bad."
Milum turned slowly to face the huge Tanith.
"I didn't mean anything. I was just joking."
"So it was a bad thing. An insult."
"Yes, but just a joke."
Milum tensed, expecting the worst, reaching his left hand down beside his seat for the axle bar he kept stowed there.
"That's okay,"
Bragg said lightly, turning to look out of a window.
"Everyone is entitled to their opinion. The Colonel Commissar told us that."
Milum sat back and exchanged knowing grins with the driver. A total dummy, they agreed, wordlessly.
"So?"
Touvent asked, teasing, looking at Bragg in the rearview mirror.
"You do everything this Colonel Commissar tells you?"
"Of course,"
the giant replied brightly.
"He's the Colonel, and the Commissar. We're his men. We're Imperial Guard, Tanith first and only. We're loyal to the Emperor, and we do everything the Colonel Commissar tells us." "What if he told you to jump off a cliff?"
Milum laughed, conspiratorially sharing the baiting with Touvent.
"Then we'd jump off the cliff."
Was that a trick question?
The convoy rolled on into the Deadlands. It had assembled that morning on a stained curtain road outside the half-burned ruin of the Aurelian Hive City, where a second front of Imperial Guard had seized control after the main assault on Nero Hive. The mammoth Imperium victory was in no doubt, but still pockets of enemy soldiers held out, fighting a lingering war of wastage and attrition to wear out the lines of supply. The Imperial Guard closed in en masse to root out and eradicate all remnants of resistance, and the work to rebuild Caligula began. What resources were available, and despite everything, Aurelian Hive was rich in storehouses, had to be redistributed. The convoy marked the first attempt to convey relief supplies to the stricken Hive Calpurnia. That meant a 200-kilometer crossing of the battle waste recently dubbed the Deadlands. Six convoys had departed Aurelian Hive that dawn. Four were headed to Nero Hive, one to Tiberias and one to Calpurnia. Gaunt's ghosts, the Tanith First, were given the protection duty. It was agreed that the run to Calpurnia was the most dangerous, as it crossed the territories of bandits, ex-hive workers who had fled the war and set themselves up as feudal warlords in the waste. Not a single relief vehicle had made it through in the last 6 weeks, and the rumors told of thousands of rebels stockpiling weapons. Some even whispered that chaos powers were involved. Everyone, including Bragg himself, was amazed when Gaunt chose Bragg to command the defense of the Calpurnia convoy. Gaunt had ignored all the protests and taken the bemused Bragg into his command bunker to brief him. Keober, Rawn, Larkin, and the other ghosts decided that Gaunt's choice simply represented an acceptance that the Calpurnia convoy wouldn't get through. It was a write-off, and Gaunt wasn't going to waste any decent commander to such long odds.
"And so our caring commissar shows his true colors," Rawn had hissed, playing with the hilt of his silver Tanith dagger.
Others fidgeted nervously, unhappy with what seemed to be going on, but unwilling to question Gaunt's authority directly. Bragg simply grinned at the honor bestowed upon him. It seemed he missed the irony. He was oblivious to the fact that he was already given up as dead. Rawn spat in the dust. At the behest of the men, Korbeck had approached Gaunt fiercely, demanding to know why Gaunt had been so callous as to deem Bragg expendable.
"Sir, with me or Haska or Larod at the helm, we might get a chance to drive that convoy through. Don't throw it away. Don't waste Bragg."
"I know what I'm doing," Gaunt had replied curtly, sending the proud Bragg and 70 other ghosts off on the detail from which everyone was sure no one would come back.
The convoy rumbled down a wide-bottomed crevasse and began to cross a cracked red dust plain of baked earth. Heat shimmered up, distorting the horizon. Outrider One roared ahead of the convoy, a track bike driven by Corporal Merrin with Trooper Kafran, manning the pintle-mounted twin autocannons in the rear. Both had their stealth cloaks wrapped up around their mouths against the heat and dust, and wore filmed, heat-crazed goggles. Merrin heaved the cycle to a halt on a rise, the convoy a kilometer behind them, and pulled down his swaddling dust veils to spit and cough.
"You feel that?" he called back to Kafran. "Eyes watching us from all around."
"Just your imagination," Kafran returned,
cranking the guns round all the same. Kafran felt a pulse in his temple that wasn't simply the heat. He'd seen the expression on Colonel Corbeck's face when Gaunt had given the convoy command to Bragg. They were dead out here, as good as written off. The 100 burnt and crucified bodies they had passed on the roadside an hour before had nothing to do with imagination. Kafran shuddered. Other outriders whirred forward in hazes of dust. Trooper Kelv drove one cycle with Mert, one of Corbeck's favored sharpshooters, in the rear cradle. Mert had his sniper gun wrapped in oilcloth in the footwell below him, ready to switch to it when the autocannon rig ran dry. Kelv pulled them up to a revving halt on a sand rise. To their left, engine idling, was Ockrin and his gunner Helat. To their right, 500 meters distant, McKendrick and his gunner Beris. A signal waved from bike to bike, then they all flew forward into the dusty basin beyond, racing parallel to the track left by Merrin and Kafran. The huge convoy thundered in after them. Tailing it and flanking the rear came three more outriders. Fulk with Logris gunning, McTee with Layman at the weapons, and Tanak with Grummid manning the cannons. Behind them, an Imperial Guard half-track driven by Weln, with Abbott and Brostin at the weapons stations, and another with long double tracks driven by McTeague, with Rahan and Nain crewing a missile launcher platform. Bragg clambered up into the gun turret over the cab of his tractor, half-hearing the whispered slanging of the Caligulan drivers, Milum and Tuvant. Heat and dust assaulted his big face. The sun was a torrential heat. His nostrils immediately clogged with ash dust, and he had to hawk and spit to clear his head. As an afterthought, he wrapped his stealth cloak around his mouth and nose, pulling out the goggles he had been issued, and also remembering to wipe zinc paste over his exposed skin. The paste, clagging and damp in a small circular tin, smelled bad, but the Colonel Commissar had told them all to use it. Bragg lifted his micro-bead comm set and slid the plug into his ear.
"Bragg, to all ghosts, remember to use your sun paint, the zinc stuff, like the Colonel Commissar told us. Over."
Over the Voxlink came a round of curses and protests.
"I mean it," Bragg said. "Wipe it on, Tanith. There's burning and there's burning," the Colonel Commissar said, "and our fair skins won't last a minute out in this."
Sliding his bike to a halt, Ockrin pulled out his tin and grudgingly applied paste to his brow and nose. He held the tin out, straight-armed, to Hellat in the back. There was a soft, distant ping, a hollow, empty sound. Hellat took the tin from Ockrin's outstretched hand just as he realized Ockrin no longer had a face. Ockrin's corpse flopped stiffly back off the saddle. Hellat cried out in alarm, gripping the yokes of his pintle weapon and raining metal fury on the distant dunes.
"Ockrin's down! We are attacked!"
he screamed as he fired. A second later, a missile lifted his cycle into the air and blew Hellat and Ockrin's corpses into pieces of cooked meat, each no larger than a clenched fist. Box traffic suddenly tumbled in confusion over the static. Murmuring the litany of protection the Ecclesiarch had taught him back on Tanith at the Primer Educatory, McTeague drew his half-track hull down behind a salty dune, and his weapon crew spat a rack of missiles into the cliff edges. Merrin drove his cycle around in a wide arc, pulling to rejoin, puffing up a wide skim of dust. Caffran rattled round the gun mount and flickered off a curving row of tracer shells into the position marked by Hellat's last assault. Ockrin and Hellat's vehicle lay in a burning heap on a crisped sand rise. The main convoy slowed as the attack made itself known. The enemy fire wickered into them from the right-hand side like rain, a few shots at first, then faster and more furious. McKendrick raced his bouncing bike in, screaming a Tanith war cry, and only when his gunner didn't begin firing did he turn to find Beris hanging dead over the pintle mount, sunlight shining through a vast hole in his torso. McKendrick braked, leapt out of the driver's position, and tossed Beris's corpse aside, maniacally training and firing the guns from a stationary position. As his cycle raced into the firefight, Mert knew he had a good angle, pumping round after round from the big caliber guns into the distant dust dunes. He screamed to his driver to go faster and overrun the enemy. Kelv was about to reply, or was halfway through saying something, when a salvo of stub rounds tore the vehicle to pieces and overturned them. Mert pulled himself out of the dust and looked round to see Kelv trapped under the wreckage, shrieking in pain. The control column had impaled him, ripping him open and pinning him into the sand under 3 tons of twisted, smouldering metal. Mert ran to him, trying to raise the wreck, trying to tip it over. Kelv bayed at him, begging, pleading. When Mert realized how heavy the wreck was and how grievous Kelv's wound, he did as his driver instructed him. He took out his las pistol and shot Kelv through the head, point blank. Kelv's body spasmed and died, gratefully. Mert dived flat as further fire found his position. He located his swaddled sniper gun, thrown clear out from the wreck. There was no time to check for damage. He pulled off the cloth, lay low, and sighted, snuggling a fresh power cell into the receiver. His long sight brought the enemy into view, magnified, hazy, distant figures milling around trying to reload a khaki-painted missile launcher. He made his first shot. It went long. He adjusted his scope as Larkin had taught him, breathed out, and made the second shot a clean kill. The enemy were turning in confusion when he made his next 3 shots in calm, cold series. 3 clean hits. Sniper Master Larkin would be proud. Atop the main tractor, Bragg yelled into his microbead, ordering the convoy to form a defensive circle. Various counter-demands whipped into his ears over the link, and he shouted them down, gripping the gun yokes with both of his huge hands and sending tight bursts of hammer fire into the starboard hills. The convoy vehicles reluctantly obliged, following Bragg's orders, circling round and forming a defensive position that the remaining outriders circled. Vehicles 2 and 4 in the convoy took heavy hits, and vehicle 6 exploded outright as a rocket torched into its tractor unit. The side paneling of the cargo unit rippled off as internal explosions blistered out through the metal skin, shredding it. Scraps of metal hull span away from the boiling black-smoked fireball, puffing hundreds of individual ripples in the ashy sand all around. Relieved at the turret guns by Trooper Cavo, Bragg dropped down into the cab to find Milum and Tuvant sheltering under window level, the grid shields and hatches pulled up.
"This is madness, you stupid kek!" Tuvant bellowed. "They'll pin us down and murder us all!"
"I don't think these bandits are really so tough," Bragg began.
Tuvant turned on him.
"You kekhead! They're all over us! God Emperor, but there are thousands of bandits out here, more than enough to kill us all! We should have kept moving! Stopping like this will give them all a chance to congregate for the kill!"
Bragg shambled across to the Caligulan drivers. There was a dull look in his eye Tuvant didn't like. With one meaty, hairy-knuckled paw, Bragg lifted Tuvant off the cabin deck by his throat.
"I'm in charge here," he growled,
his voice as deep and solid as his build, reverberative.
"The Colonel Commissar said so. If we have to fight our way through to Calpurnia a micron at a time, we will. And we will all fight. Clear?"
Clear,
gasped Tuvant, going blue.
"Now, can you make yourself useful?"
"How?"
snarled Milum acidly from behind. Bragg dropped Tuvant, who sprawled, retching, and turned to face the other driver. Milum had his greasy axle bar in his hands.
"You don't scare me, Gust."
"Then you must be very stupid,"
Bragg muttered, turning aside without interest. Milum launched forward to crush the big man's skull with 5 kilos of cold-stamped metal. Bragg broke stride lightly, impossibly lightly, it seemed, for such a great bulk. He caught the descending bar in one palm. There was an audible slap. Milum gasped as the bar was pulled out of his hands. Bragg tossed it aside.
"You can start by not attacking me. You fething non-combatants really wind me up. Where the fifth would you be if we hadn't come to pull your asses out of the chaos pit? Safe and sound in Aurelian Hive, probably,"
Milum jeered.
"Not out in the Deadlands, surrounded by terrorist infantry."
Bragg shrugged.
"Probably. With the other cowards. Are you a coward, Driver Milum?"
"Kick you."
"Just asking. The Colonel Commissar told me to watch out for cowards. Told me to shoot them on sight, as they were treasonous dogs who didn't deserve the salvation of the Golden Throne. I wouldn't shoot them. Not me."
There was a pause. Bragg smiled.
"I'd just hit them. Has a similar result. Do you want me to hit you, Milum?"
No. Then don't assault me again. You can help, even if you don't know the business end of a weapon from your own arse. Get on the Voxcaster. Recite the Ecclesiarchy's Oath of Obedience. You know that?"
"Of course I know that."
"Then what?" "Then recite it again. Make it clear. I'm proud. Recite it again, then again, and then again. If you get bored, insert the Emperor's daily prayer, for variation. Maybe the Imperial Litany of Deliverance for good measure. Fill the Vox channels with soothing, inspiring words. Can you do that?"
Milum nodded and crossed to the Voxcaster built into the tractor's dash.
"Good man,"
Bragg said. Milum started to speak into the caster horn, remembering the verses he had learned as a child. Outside, laser and stubfire whined into the circled convoy. The outriders were laying in hard. Merrin drew his bike in so that Cafran could do real damage to the slowly encircling bandits. Falk, McTee, and Tanak ran the line. From the back of Falk's machine, Logris excelled and scored 4 kills. McTee's gunner, Layman, made one of his own before the upper part of his head was scythed off by a las shot at the mouth. Tanak and Grummid made 6, maybe 7, good kills before a short-range missile ended their lives and their glory, Debris and body parts flew out from a searing typhoon of ignited bike fuel.
"Bragg! Bragg! We have to retreat!"
Whelan yelled from the half-track, Abbat dead behind him, and Brostin blazing with his flamer. In the cab of his freighter, Bragg was calmly unwrapping his autocannons from a felt shroud. Behind him, Milum was steadily reciting into the vox horn. Bragg paused, fingering his microbead to open the vox line.
"No, Whelan. No retreat. No retreat," he said simply.
Rubbing his sore throat, Tuvant scrambled up from the floor, about to argue with the huge ghost, but he stopped dead as he saw the weapon that the Tanith hulk was preparing. Not one, but two autocannons, the like of which were usually fixed to tripod or pintle mounts. Bragg had them lashed together with a makeshift trigger array made out of a bent ration pack fork so he could fire them as a pair. Long belt loops of ammunition played out from the gun slots, leading back to a parcel of round boxes. Bragg punched out the Perspex window section from the rear of the cab and laid his twin muzzles across the sill. He looked back at Tuvant.
"You wanted something?"
"No,"
Tuvant replied, ducking suddenly as stubfire perforated the cab and showered them with metal shards and soot.
"I can fire this on my own if I have to, but it would be easier if I had someone to feed."
Tuvant blinked. Then he scrambled forward and grabbed the ammo belts, easing them around so they would pull unobstructed from the boxes.
"Thanks,"
smiled Bragg quickly, then turned to hunch and squint out of the window port. He squeezed the trigger assembly. The twin guns barked deafeningly in the confines of the cab. Milum paused in his recitation and covered his ears with a grimace. Tuvant shuddered, but kept working dutifully to play the ammo belts out clear and clean. Shell cases billowed through the air like chaff. Bragg's first devastating salvo had gone wide, passing over the top of the nearby cliffs. He grinned at himself and adjusted his aim.
"Try again,"
he murmured.
"What?"
asked Tuvant.
"Nothing."
Bragg opened fire again, the barking chatter of the paired guns filling the cab again. Now his shots were stitching along the valley wall and crossing the far dunes. Something he touched exploded in a violent plume of red fire. Bragg played his guns around that area again for a minute or so. Out on the dunes, with the convoy circled behind him, Mert crawled forward, readjusting his aim. He could hear the anxious but determined voice reciting the Emperor's prayer over his earplug, and it filled him with a sense of right and dignity. He blinked dust out of his eyes. He ditched his sand goggles the moment he'd hit the ground. Larkin had told him that nothing should get between a sniper's scope and his naked eye. "You only saw the truth of the world when your eye was clear and you were looking down your scope," Larkin had said in training. Mert smiled at the memory. He remembered how Larkin would often carry his scope around in his thigh pouch and take it out to look at people through it.
"To tell if they're lying," he always said.
Mert's scope wasn't lying now. He could see over 36 bandits advancing over the dunes under cover of the foggy dust kicked up by the firefight. They were running low, heads down, hugging the contours of the ground. Mert took aim at the nearest one. He sighed and fired, timing his finger to the moment of respiratory emptiness so nothing in his torso would jerk the aim. The laser burst punched through the top of the bandit's bowl helmet, presented as it was by his head-down approach. The shot probably passed down through his skull, his neck, and his torso, following the line of his spinal column, Mert thought, as the figure dropped stone dead in a crumpled pile. He adjusted his aim and took another bandit in the face when he looked up to take a bearing. A slight swing to the left, and another came into his sight, scurrying forward to gain new cover. A sigh, a squeeze, a slight recoil. The figure flipped back and fell silent. Mert readjusted and was about to target a small group of infantry when their position dissolved in a haze of heat and outflung debris. Missile hit, he thought. Rahan and Nain were keeping the aim of the missile turret low, sliding off single shots that hugged the ground cover and buried themselves in the foe. McTeague edged the half-track along the lip of the folded dunes, skirting the enemy as best he could. His weapon crew had almost expended their missiles, so he set the drive in idle and clambered back into the turret bed to set up the stub gun folded away in a deck locker. He had it up and lashed into the armored side panel of the track as Rahan volleyed off 5 missiles high into the air. They looked like burning javelins as they arched over the desert and flew down onto unseen targets below the dune. McTee fired the autocannon mount Lehman had been manning until the feeder belt jammed and the gun glowed red. With a curse, he snatched up his las rifle and dived over the side. Enemy lasfire reached his vehicle a moment later and blew it up in a shower of metal debris that pattered around him as he crawled through the sand. McTee felt a sharp and painful impact in his ankle. Looking back, prone on his belly, he realized his combat trousers were smoldering from the wash of cinders, and a thick piece of metal debris had pierced his foot. He beat down the fire, then rolled over to yank the debris from his ankle. It was the shattered handle of his vehicle's autogun return, he realized. The pain was immense. He pulled at it and passed out momentarily. Coming to, he realized that the shrapnel wasn't going to come free from the bones of his foot without a surgeon. He chewed down a handful of painkillers, and as the heady high smacked into his brain, he rolled over and began firing his las gun into the dune crest behind him. Whelm blasted away from his vehicle's turret next to Brostin, who had ditched his flamer for a las rifle. Bandits were running at them from a scoop of low-lying desert, and they shot everything that moved. McKendrick realized his guns were out as the last of the belt feed wickered through the slot, and the weapons coughed dry. Bandit troops were all over him, charging up to take his machine. He pulled out his las pistol and shot the first one through the head, gutting the second and blowing a knee off the third. Then he took a glancing wound in the left shoulder that turned him sideways and knocked him to the deck. There was a roaring sound. Merrin's bike came over the rise in a puff of dust, landing hard, Caffran hammering the enemy with his guns. Merrin slewed to the left as Caffran played the cannons around, exploding most of the enemy who were in eyeshot. The others scrambled for cover. "Come aboard!" Merrin shouted over the roar of his engine, and McKendrick leapt onto the flatbed next to Caffran. Merrin gunned the engine, and they hammered straight at the enemy lines. Firing from the back of his vehicle, Logris, one of McColl's elite scout brigade, realized his driver was losing it. Fulk was crying out, screaming, resisting the hammer of weapons fire. He slewed the bike around, away from the action.
"Pull us back around! The war's over there!" Logris bellowed.
Fulk said something absurd and gunned the motor of the outrider towards the comparative safety of the convoy circle. Logris climbed forward over the ammo boxes and feeder cables strewn across the back platform of the bike. He came upon the whimpering Fulk from behind and slammed his head sideways into the armor panel of the pilot's door. The bike shuddered to a sidelong halt as Fulk went limp. Logris spat on the driver.
"Coward,"
he said, then turned back. Enemy troops were scurrying across the cracked dustland towards him. He took out his las gun and armed it.
"Let's go,"
he said to them, though they couldn't hear. Bragg pulled back from the window and released his finger on the trigger assembly.
"What?"
Tuvant asked.
"Get out,"
Bragg said suddenly.
"You and Maloom, get out of the cab and back onto the trailer."
"Why?"
"Fire patterns."
"What?" Bragg turned and cursed at the Caligulan driver.
"Fire patterns! Fire patterns! They're concentrating their fire on the tractor units. It's the freight they want. If you want to be safe, get into the sections they don't dare shoot at."
Tuvant and Maloom hurried back through the communicating door into the freight section. Bragg wiped his brow. His hand was rich with sweat and soot. Over the Voxlink, he ordered all his crews to do the same. "The bandits want this cargo, and so, Throne help me, they'll be less sure of shooting at us when we're part of it." He yanked his autocannons off the sill and dragged them and the ammo boxes out onto the top of the freight unit.
"We're going to die here,"
Tuvant said, looking out from the top of the freight unit at the hundreds of bandit troopers who were advancing on their circle of machines.
"No, we're not,"
Bragg told him.
"You're mad," spat Tuvant. "We're surrounded by them, thousands of them. They'll pick us off, every last man."
Bragg sighed and closed his eyes. The Marauder bombers came low over the ridge, annihilating the enemy with their belly-slung payloads.
"There are bandits hiding out there in the Deadlands. Impossible to target,"
Bragg smiled, repeating what Gaunt had told him.
"Unless there is something to draw them out and unify them. Something like this convoy."
Tuvant looked at the huge ghost in disbelief.
"We were bait?"
"Yes."
"Kick you for using us."
"I'm sorry. It was the Colonel Commissar's idea."
Tuvant sagged down onto the freighter top walkway. Bragg hunkered next to him. Around them, sheets of incendiary bombs and phosphor fire scorched the hills. The Imperial fighter bombers shattered the air as they went supersonic and crossed the low hills to pull around for another massacre run.
Tuvont.
Tuvont looked round at the giant.
We were bait, but we still have a purpose. We'll get this convoy through. Calpurnia will rejoice, just like I said. It's just the Colonel Commissar.
Tuvant turned, eyes red.
I'm getting kick-tired of hearing that title.
His name's Gaunt. A good man.
General Thoth ordered him to supervise the relief work here on your world. He knew that couldn't happen all the while the terrorists and bandit clans were out here.
So he set a lure of fat, tasty freight trucks, bound for Calpurnia.
Great.
We got them all in one place so that the Navy Air Wing could dispose of them. Be happy, man. We've won a great victory here.
Tuvont looked up at him. His face was pale.
All I know is I've been used as bait by your Colonel Commissar. You knew that all along.
Bragg sat back against the guardrail, smelling the acid-rich reek of the burning napalm.
Yes, the bandits aren't working blind, you know. Hive workers in Aurelian are tipping them off as to the movements of supply convoys. Why else do you think the Colonel Commissar put me in charge of this run?
Tuvont blinked at him, uncertain. Bragg patted his vast chest with huge hands.
I'm big. I must be stupid. No brain. The sort of, what was it again?
Kick.
Who would drive the convoy into trouble and then circle it in a defensive position for easy pickings? The sort of idiot who was likely to deliver the convoy right into the hands of the bandits.
Are you telling me you were part of the lure too?
The sweet part. The part they couldn't resist. The part the workers on the inside would vox to their bandit friends about. Convoys coming, boys, and there's an idiot in charge. Right? Maloom?
Maloom glared back at them from his place against the rail.
Kick you.
Bragg shook his great head. He held up a data slate.
Friend of mine, Trooper Raglan, comms officer Raglan, who's monitoring your cipher traffic. I've got you here. Tipping off your bandit friends as to the time, schedule, makeup, and strength of this convoy. Colonel Commissar Gaunt told me to do it.
Maloom?
Tuvant stammered. A compact auto pistol was suddenly in Maloom's hand as he leapt up.
Kick you, guard filth!
Bragg was up in an instant, shielding Tuvant and swinging a massive fist at Maloom. The gun went off. There was a sickening gristle crack of impact. The shot went wild. His face mashed beyond recognition. Thluin Maloom tumbled off the walkway of the freight unit and was dead before his body snapped on the hard-packed desert 20 meters below. Bragg turned back to Tuvant and helped him up. There was blood on his bulky knuckles. Behind them, the sky was washed with heat wash and cinder smog from the bombing runs.
He was a traitor and a coward,
Bragg explained to Tuvant.
Colonel Commissar Gaunt told you that, right?
No, I worked that out all by myself. Now, I believe we have a date with Calpurnia Hive.